0-2 from Miller to Rivera. Mason will deliver, and a swing and a miss! An immaculate inning for Mason Miller! And he did it on all sliders. Just the second immaculate inning in Padre history, and they have both come against the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah, that was fun, that part. That part was definitely fun. I told you a couple of weeks ago, Scrammy, Major League Baseball should absolutely just outlaw his slider. It's totally unfair when the guy's throwing 105 miles an hour and then breaks off that slider. Orioles had no chance against it. Unfortunately, Nestor Cortez was not throwing that slider. And he didn't have the same arsenal as Mason Miller did. We welcome you into an abridged edition of Gwynn and Chris for this Wednesday post-game show. Chris Ello, Matt Scraby together in our Odyssey Palace studios. Tony Gwynn Jr., he's idle. I think he's... is he even in town?
No, he's not.
I believe he's...
And yes, all the questions yesterday, Tony is not on the broadcast for the rest of the week.
Yeah, and that's just scheduled. That's scheduled,
yes.
Scheduled maintenance, as
yes,
it were.
Yes.
So, yeah,
scheduled
I think Tony, you know, I just want to say, in general saying, Tony's daughters are really talented soccer players.
Yes, they
and they're
are.
Getting recruited all over the country.
Yes, they are.
And say what you will about Mr. T. Gwynn J., he's an excellent dad.
Yes, he is.
And he wants to be with his daughters through this recruiting process. So we understand that. We miss him, but we are here until 7 o'clock, a bonus hour of it.
I don't think he minds missing days like today.
You know, yeah, right. I thought long and hard about coming in
me
myself.
Too. Yeah, me too. As I was driving down and I heard the third home run go out of the park, I was like, do I even want to go to work today?
You know, on the second home run, I had a bit of a scratchy throat. So just imagine what happened on the third home run. Yeah, the Orioles win it again, 7-5. They sweep the Padres, and the Padres fall, at least for the time being, another half game back of the Dodgers in the National League West. Give you just a little good news for the moment. The Dodgers are losing in Pittsburgh 2-0. I can't see what inning that is. Fifth inning, I believe. In
that
Pittsburgh.
Is a very weird score.
It's not a good
bug.
Score graphic. Yeah, it's hard to see. 2-0, Pittsburgh. Ohtani was supposed to start this game for the Dodgers tonight. He wasn't feeling 100%, so they scratched him from the start as far as on the mound, but he is in the lineup as a DH. Right now, Pirates lead 2-0. But that really is neither here nor there, because if the Padres don't win another game, then the Dodgers have already clinched the NL West, right? It's over.
Yeah.
So right now, obviously, it's all about the Padres and trying to get out of this. And I looked this up, Scraby, and I did my best to make sure of this. But currently, the Padres have lost 8 out of 10 games for the first and only time so far this season. So they picked a really lousy time to have this happen.
That actually makes me feel a little bit better. I don't know why.
They've had a couple of 7 out of 9s, but this is the first 8 out of 10 that I could find going back through the schedule so far this season. And of course, it coincides with the day that they beat the Dodgers on a Saturday and went one game ahead into first place. And since then, it has been one thing after another. Today's game, we're going to go through it all on Notes on a Scorecard in just a little while. Obviously, it won't be a very happy Notes on a Scorecard. There's not a lot of good stuff to report. But, you know, I know everybody's thinking a lot of different things right now. And I hate to tell you, but right now, the 8 out of 10, the getting swept by Baltimore, the playing pretty poorly in Minnesota, it doesn't really have to do with the lineup construction. I know everybody's talking about this guy ought to bat here and that guy to be in the lineup there. And
that's misplaced frustration.
The lineup construction. It has nothing to do with bullpen usage. You should bring this guy in. You should bring that guy in. That guy's got a rest. He needs to be matched up against him. It really doesn't even have that much to do with, you know, fielding and not making plays, which I will tell you, they haven't been doing a good job of. Jake Cronenworth, very uncharacteristically.
Yeah.
That's not the first time he's kicked one in this recent stretch last night.
Yeah.
And make no mistake, that was huge. All right. It really doesn't have anything to do with that, because teams make misplays, both for and against you. It doesn't have to do with any umpiring. Mm-mm. The umpiring has been good. It's been bad. They've got calls. They've missed calls. Some have gone in the Padres' favor. Some have gone the other way. It only has to do with one thing. The rest of it right now, you can toss out. And you can toss out all of your analytics as well. Because analytics and everything else can't fix the fact that right now the Padres' starting pitching is a disaster. And as long as it is a disaster, I don't really think it's going to matter what they do. They're not going to win a game until somebody goes out there and gives them a decent start.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone through it. I'm sure a lot of people in the media have. You'll probably be reading it tomorrow in the paper. But during this 10-game stretch in which they're lost eight, starting pitching, 38 and a third innings. Let's just start there. In 10 games, they've pitched 38 and a third innings. That doesn't even average 4 innings per start. Now, I will admit that that includes the opener game where David Morgan only pitched 2 innings. But even if you take that out, they pitched 36 innings in 9 games, which is exactly 4 per game. That won't get it done. In those 38 and a third innings, they've allowed 61 base runners. All of a sudden, the Padres either can't get anybody out or can't throw a strike. And we're going to get into that much more in the notes on a scorecard. But 61 base runners for a 1.6 whip, which is Colorado Rockies-like. And then the ERA, they've given up 29 runs for an ERA of 6.81. Now, a 10-game stretch doesn't make a season. What I'm trying to point out is, though, you want to worry about all the other stuff. You want to complain about Mike Schilt. You want to complain that AJ got the wrong people. You want to complain that they're playing people who they traded for and that the organization is messed up. You want to blame the fans. You want to put it on the radio show hosts. We got big shoulders. But the bottom line is, if they don't get starting pitching, it doesn't matter. The 27 Yankees would have lost 8 of these last 10 games. Scraby, they're behind before they come to bat every game.
I'm aware.
Right, and they're aware. And you just can't win like that in Major League Baseball. And, you know, I'm going to put it, you know, give you a couple more statistics to support this notion that the starting pitching needs to be fixed right now. And, I mean, I'm not telling anything that people aren't noticing. I'm just trying to underscore the problem here.
Yeah.
Teams that allow – let me put it a different way. The Padres' record this year, when they give up the first run of the game, is 29 wins and 35 losses. When the other team scores first.
Better than I thought, honestly.
You want to know how good it is? It's the best record in baseball.
No way.
No team is anywhere close to 500 when they in games that they give up the first run. Furthermore, you have to go back to, I don't know if you, well, you might have just been out of the crib, Scraby. You got to go back to the 2004 Giants. I know, you're a little older.
I was 19.
Yeah,
I know.
19. You got to go back to the 2004 Giants. They are the last team anywhere in baseball that had a winning record for a season in games that the other team scored first. So teams generally do not win when they allow the other team to score first. The Padres are 29 and 35, and that's the best record in all of baseball. So you got to start scoring first. And when you're at home, that means giving your team a chance to score first.
Yeah.
You have to get the guys out in the top of the inning so you can score first.
I got to go through and
that's just not, obviously, isn't happening. So, that's it. I we can go through all this other stuff, and we will in the notes on a scorecard. We'll look at a lot of things, and we can blame this player and that player and this manager and that. But to me, it's all kind of a moot point right now. Do you see anything different?
And the one thing that I think fans are going to blame the manager. Fans are going to blame the coaches.
They're going to blame the organization right now. Why are we starting Nestor Cortes?
Yes.
Why are we
yes.
starting JP
yes.
Sears?
And I think those are fair. I think those are fair because
I understand it to a point because there's a guy that is sitting in the minor leagues who we complained a lot about this year. in Randy Vasquez,
yeah,
who simply has been better than what we've seen from these two guys.
I agree.
He just has been. I'm not, this isn't an opinion. That's just the way it is.
It is the way it is.
Right?
And right now, you need to bring him back. You need to put, because they don't have the starting pitching that anyone is confident in right now outside of maybe Nick Pivetta. And even then, Nick Pivetta's start the other day was kind, I mean, he gave up two runs, but for him, it was kind of suspect. And you cannot start Nestor Cortez anymore. If you want to use him out of the bullpen, but you cannot give up as many home runs as Nestor Cortez does to start games, because it is just putting the team way behind really early, and you can't win Major League Baseball games when you're down 7-0 after three innings. Just not something you usually do.
Nestor Cortez, today, 2 1/3 innings, 6 runs, allowed... What was it, 4 home runs today?
Mm-hmm.
Last time at Minnesota, 3 innings, 3 runs, but you're looking at another 7-8 base runners before he was actually ejected
while he was
being taken out
of
that
weird.
Game.
Yeah, but yeah.
He had the one great start against the Dodgers. Can't take that away. It was brilliant. It's the last time the Padres even had a quality start. Before that, 5 2/3 innings, 4 runs in San Francisco. Gave up 3 home runs in that game. He hasn't pitched well. He has not pitched well. It's been pretty evident to me. The 3 home runs he gave up in a row today, not the first time that's happened this season.
No.
He gave up 3 home runs to the very first 3 batters he faced this year.
Yeah.
When he was with the Brewers. We had him on a couple of weeks ago. I really am a fan already
great
of
dude.
Nestor Cortez, nasty Nestor, but
he's not nasty.
We don't have time right now to like guys or dislike guys, right? To me, you got to get the guys in you feel have the best chance to do the job. I don't feel comfortable with Cortez. I don't feel comfortable with Sears. I don't feel 100% with Vasquez. Nobody's complained about him more than me, right? But the results say that he's been more capable of going 5 innings and limiting the damage than these two guys have.
Outside of Pivetta, Randy Vasquez might be the second best pitcher starter they have right now.
Yeah.
Because Michael King, obviously he's injured, but he disappeared from this team.
That might be overstating it, but I know what you're getting at.
He did disappear because he was hurt. And so
Cease's
I know you can't handle that. Cease isn't pitching well.
Darvish is a hit and miss. Yeah, you're right.
I think this game sort of broke me.
I get it.
And I have a deep dive in stats that I want to go through a little bit later, because some of the stats that the Padres are putting up right now in the last like 10, maybe 2 weeks are awful.
Yeah, they're not great.
Awful.
Yeah, they're not stats of a team that you have a lot of confidence in.
What about Matt Waldron? Why not him?
Okay.
He made one start this year.
I would rather see
Matt Waldron over J.P. Sears.
You know, called me today, Randy Jones. Maybe we dust him off.
Matt Waldron is a... He was a big part of last year. They gave him one start.
Okay.
But I am done.
Okay.
I am done with getting swept by the Orioles. The first time the Orioles have ever swept an NL West team on the road in franchise history.
Yeah, well, get used to it. Unfortunately, the Padres, another thing that we didn't point out, and this is all statistical, but the Padres have been a downright disaster against the American League this year. They have been swept by the Blue Jays, the Rays, the Mariners, and now the Orioles.
Yeah.
The Padres are 18-27, a winning percentage of .400 against the American League. That winning percentage would have them only better than 2 teams in all of baseball. They have not been able to beat the American League. Now, the good news is they only have 1 series left, and it's against the White Sox of all teams. But I'll be honest with you, I don't feel great about it, because they just, for whatever reason, are not beating the American League. I don't know how you can possibly analytically tear that apart, but it just is what it is this year.
Matt Waldron's getting crushed in the chat for my suggestion, but did everybody forget that Matt Waldron was decent last year? I mean, I'm not saying that Matt Waldron's the answer.
I don't think Matt Waldron is going to be the answer.
But I will say this, Chris.
I don't think it's fair to put Matt Waldron, you know, after a season in the minor leagues and say, you got September starts with the season on the line.
All right, that's fair.
But I don't think it's unfair to take a look at Vasquez right now again.
All right, San Diego.
I don't think that's unfair.
On Friday night, they're facing Kyle Freeland. They have a TBD. That TBD better be replaced by Randy Vasquez.
I will say this.
We need a move now.
Okay, well, you have spoken, and we'll see where that goes. I will say this, Scrabe. That TBD right now is the most important
TBD
person
of the
in the
year.
Padre organization, because that TBD has got to somehow give them a good game. I don't care if it's in Coors Field. They have to find a way to get six innings, not throw 180 pitches, and give the Padres a chance to at least, you know, have a look at the game and try to get a win there.
Do you think
that's obviously desperation?
Do you think at this point it is there needs to be a little bit of a sense of urgency from this organization to try to stack some wins here?
Let's talk about that when we come back, because I do want to talk about the urgency. I want to talk about the attitude of the Padres and whether they care and whether they're rolling over and whether Manny's given up the seat. I mean, I've read all of this stuff. So let's address some of that when we come back. We are underway for our short Wednesday post-game get-together. We do have some fun stuff. Notes on a scorecard at the bottom of the hour. That will go, you know, a little more in-depth into everything that happened in the game today. We will, Scraby says we will have a Chris versus the fans.
We need to play today.
Special time today at 6 p.m.
Yes.
For a little trivia. Okay, that's good. And then after that, we're going to have Scraby's statistical deep dive.
Yes.
I don't know what that is, but I can't wait for it.
I got so angry when I was, I got here, I was like, I'm going through everything since they lost to the Dodgers on that Sunday, and we're going to talk about it.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that deep dive. We're also going to preview the NFC and AFC North. Remember that we are on the eve of the start of the NFL season, which is crazy right now.
Oh, Roger Goodell making big news, saying that Taylor Swift maybe is the Super Bowl halftime show.
I guess that's big news,
That's what I saw on today's show this morning.
Doesn't quite register on my radar.
No,
but
that's where the NFL is at right now. They're going to take every Taylor Swift thing mention they can get.
All right. Will she be in Brazil for the game Friday
night?
Oh,
you know she will.
Really?
I don't think she's on tour. Sure?
Okay. Well, that's where her honey opens on Friday night.
She's got the money.
She can afford it, yes. All right, it's Chris Ello. It's Scraby over there. Nobody's feeling too good about things right now, so we will swim around in our misery together here on 97.3 The Fan. I'm miserable. Scraby's miserable.
I'm miserable.
I imagine many of you are similar to miserable. 5:24 is the time, a special post-game edition of Gwynn and Chris. We'll take it an extra hour tonight until 7 o'clock. This, though, is the happy hour. It is brought to you, as happy as things can be.
Yes.
It's brought to you by GL Pools, the swimming pool experts trusted by thousands of San Diegans since 2006. Baseball season's in full swing. So is swim season. Call GL Pools. Mention the word radio. You will get a free month of pool service. Maybe you do that today, because that would be something that would be good that could happen. Right?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
A month of free pool service will help.
Do something that could be good.
It'll put a smile on your face for a second.
It very well could. Pittsburgh 2, Dodgers nothing. Top of the sixth. 7-5 was the final today. The Orioles sweep the series. They are the third, or is it fourth? Tampa Bay came here, swept. Seattle came here and swept. Baltimore came here and swept. So three American League teams have come in here this year and swept. It just makes no sense, but like I said, maybe we'll just skate right through the National League in the playoffs and then have to try to figure it out in the World Series if we can beat an American League team. But the National League hasn't been that much of a problem, comparatively anyway.
It's crazy because there's still...
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
They're still in a good playoff spot, but it just does not feel like they're heading that way right now.
Yes, they're still 4.5 games clear.
That's not a lot.
I beg your pardon. 5.5 games clear.
Okay.
Of both the Reds and the Giants. Now the Giants have moved back into the
contention.
On the cusp of conversation. All right, here's what Kevin Acey put together, and then Scraby relayed to me. And these are teams that, what, Scraby, all ended up in the World Series.
All ended up in the World Series after having a nine-game streak.
A mess of a stretch in September.
Yes.
For instance, last year's Dodgers lost 6 of 9 in mid-September. That's not that bad. 2023 Rangers won the World Series, but they opened September by going 1-7.
Mm-hmm.
Phillies of 2022 got to the World Series despite losing 10 of 13 in September. It kind of goes on and on. The worst one on here is the 2017 Dodgers, who went to the World Series despite an 11-game losing streak in September.
This did make me feel a little bit better this morning.
Maybe this will all make everybody feel a little bit better. Yeah, hopefully this will just be a footnote when all is said and done.
The 2015 Royals, in the final month, basically, from September 4th through the 29th, they went 8-16 and they won the World Series.
Yeah, right. So hopefully this will just be a footnote. But for the time being, it's hardly a footnote. It is out and out kind of a disaster. So is there urgency?
Yeah.
You asked.
Yes. Does the team have urgency right now?
Yeah, I think urgency goes along with, do they care and do they have desire and are they trying?
Yes.
Okay? Because I don't see how any team wouldn't have a certain amount of urgency no matter what sport you're playing. I think it's fun to talk about as a fan and go, we're going into Colorado Friday. We have to win. Yeah, I know. But I'm pretty sure they're going into Colorado Friday thinking, yeah, we really got to win.
I think they're starting to feel it.
Okay, so I think there will be urgency if that's your definition of urgency. My definition of urgency is, are they playing? Are they showing up? Are they posting? And I think all you need to do, and here comes, you know, here comes my paycheck from the Padres. But the fact they were down 7-0 in the sixth inning today, and got back into the game and had two or three chances with, you know, the tying runs up at the plate and batting and et cetera. I don't know. Doesn't that tell you? I mean,
I think
they were
does.
Down 7-0. The game was over. Yet they got 4. They got 5. They got close. They got some more rallies. I think this notion that they don't care. I've read, you know, well, Manny's packed it in. Well, look, the home run he hit today was only his second since the end of July. So, okay, he's been not Manny. But, I mean, are you kidding me? Manny Machado is going to probably be in the Hall of Fame? You think he's just kind of coasting it in right here?
Well, there's one thing I've learned about Manny, and it's that he cares very much about the game of baseball.
I can't go there. I love to kind of argue with some of the, you know, the Twitter stuff and some of the people, but I can't even consider the fact that this team all of a sudden, after caring apparently for the first 138 games of the season, has just stopped caring the last 10. It's really hard to believe.
And I really do buy into the fact that these guys want to be, they don't want to be the laughing stock of baseball. They want to be able to, you know, stand by or stand tall for their name, and they want to be able to play well. And I don't think that they have, they're not caring. That's not what I think at all. I think they do care, and I think it hurts them much more than we think it does when they lose games like
this. I think
this.
It hurts them less than it hurts us, actually.
Really? After being swept by the Orioles, they're not sitting on the bus right now flying to Colorado being like, oh, that was bad.
I doubt it. I really doubt that they're sitting on there wallowing. I
don't think they're wallowing. I think they're thinking that was bad.
I don't think they have boomboxes playing that he plays anymore.
No.
But you know what I mean? They're not celebrating.
They're not dancing around on the plane.
It's not going to be a loud, you know, exciting flight to Colorado. But it's going to be like a lot of the other flights. Such is the way baseball is. Now,
you're right in a way.
I know that what you want out there, and I want, and Scraby wants, is you want somebody to stand up in the middle of the flight to Colorado
and give some speech.
Grab the microphone from the flight stewardess or the deck, you know, the captain, and say, attention, this is Will Wagner. Let's go!
I don't think Will Wagner's the guy to deliver that message.
We got to get our act together, guys. This is all getting away from us. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But, I mean, I know we would want to do it, right? If you were on the flight, you'd be tempted, wouldn't you?
You know? Yeah, I would be tempted. Yeah. But I think that, you know, let's not even get started on Will Wagner. I'm not sure why.
Well, we'll get into him in the notes on the scorecard. Okay. It's all coming up in the notes on the scorecard.
All right, there's another thing. You know, I guess I'll just wait till later.
Wait,
but there's
Will
so
Wagner.
Many things that I think this team needs to be doing right now.
Wait to your stats deep dive. You're going to get your chance. Right now, we're talking about whether or not you were on the team flight to Colorado and somebody just happened to fumble the microphone in your lap. Would you turn it on and say, come on! Let's go!
I don't think I would do it like that, but I would.
I'm going to admit to this.
Uh-oh.
I've been doing the women's basketball for 100 years. I often come back with our PR guy, Ben Pearson, after a game on the road. And we will commiserate to each other. And we will say something along the lines of, you know, I think we're hurting more than they are after that loss. It's a common feeling, actually. The players play. They can go out and do something about it. They have another game to look forward to. We are fans. We sit there and we wear it.
Yep.
They don't. They don't have time to wear it.
And I think that's also a good thing.
Yeah.
Because if they're worried like we are, then they're going to play worried, and that's not a good thing. This team knows that they can win games. They just haven't been able to do it lately. And I just, you know, it also bothers me when they're going up against teams, A, that are not very good, and pitchers that aren't very good. The guy who started today, not a good pitcher. Not a good pitcher. And they got to him late.
Yeah,
but those are the games that frustrate me the most when it's a good matchup for the hitters of this team.
Should win.
And you should win. And Dylan Cease on Monday, giving up only two runs, that's a game that they could win as well.
They should have. They should have won that game. That was a battle of the bullpens from the fifth inning on. They lost to the Baltimore bullpen. That shouldn't happen. But it does, unfortunately. More Gwen and Chris coming up. Notes on a scorecard. We're going to dive a little deeper into the stuff you want to dive into, Scraby. It's next on 97.3 The Fan.
3-2 in the air up the left field line. Laureano going back towards the corner. He is on the move. He leaps up. Oh, he went over the wall. And he got it. A catch. Oh, what a catch. Laureano took a home run away over the little wall in the left field corner. And two down here in the ninth as Couser tips his cap to his former teammate. Hang a big old star.
That was a really awesome catch. I know it's hard to find anything bright, you know, in losing 8 out of 10 and getting swept by the Orioles, but Mason Miller throwing an immaculate inning. I got to be honest with you, if you're at the game today, you saw something that very few people get to see. There's been about as many immaculate innings in baseball history as there have been no-hitters. There just aren't many. The Padres have only had 2 no-hitters, and now they've had 2 immaculate innings. We went through this a while ago, Scrape. I don't know if you remember. We actually looked it up. Brian Lawrence, the old right-hander, 2002,
had been the
first and only Padre until Mason Miller did that today. And then that catch by Laureano, that's as good as any you're going to see by a left fielder.
Did you also know that it came against the Orioles? So both immaculate innings have come against the Orioles
Padres. And you know what else happened?
What?
Ramon Laureano's catch today. That was against the Orioles as well.
Yes.
Okay, so that's good.
But I think it's kind of, if there's less perfect games than immaculate innings, or whatever you said, and both of the Padres happened against the Orioles, I think that's
a weird
stat.
All right. The immaculate inning actually has only been accomplished 114 times. There have been well over 300 no-hitters. So, yeah, it's far more rare than a no-hitter. So that was pretty fun. All right, let me get some notes on a scorecard after we check you a little traffic.
What did Chris like? What does Chris want to clean up? Observations written on a grocery list. Notes on a scorecard starts now.
All right, the notes on the scorecard, we do it after most day games. I sit there, I watch the game, I write a bunch of crazy notes on my scorecard, or in this case, my wife's grocery list. First thing I wrote today, Scraby, allow the first run of the game. The Padres are 29-34. They've lost six of their last. And then before I finish the sentence, home run Jackson Holliday. They were down 1-0. Before I could even write the fact that they needed to not fall behind today. Like, I didn't even get it
written. So it's
your
fault?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Most everything is.
All right.
And has been. You can go on and on about all of these statistics about starting pitching, but Nestor Cortes didn't do anything to change it. The first inning, it almost came apart for him there.
Yep.
Bases were loaded, one out. He threw that 3-2 pitch to, of all people, Colton Cowser. And for one of the rare times, Don Orsillo and Mark Grant both got fooled by the home plate umpire. They both said ball four.
Was fooled too because
Jesse too.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone.
Yeah,
that was weird.
It was. The home plate umpire just didn't do anything, and then all of a sudden went strike three, and everybody was like, "What? What happened there?"
Yeah, that is so weird. That is totally weird.
And then they showed the replay of the pitch. It was a strike by like a fingernail. So it wasn't a bad call. But he was that close, Cortes, to being pretty much out of it in the first inning. And then, you know, this compounds it. You only give up the one run in the top of the first. But then, you know, you talk about the guy, Povich.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Maury Povich?
I meant to make that joke earlier, but you beat me to it.
I've never heard of this guy, but a 12-pitch inning, he strikes out Fernando and Manny, and then the Orioles are right back up. Like, that's kind of the way it's been going.
Yep.
By the second inning, Elias Diaz couldn't make a play on a little swinging bunt. Kind of been part of it. It didn't give up any runs, but it made Cortes throw more pitches, which the Padres can't afford. I thought Jackson Merrill in the bottom of the second rolled over on a ground ball, and I thought, you know, Tony was right the other day. We argued about whether Merrill should have been playing. He just didn't look right at the plate. I mean, when he's just rolling over, easy ground balls to second base.
This is definitely a sophomore slump, and I know that he's had some weird injuries this year too. But he started the season.
This ankle has not helped him. He did hit a nice hard line drive to left field in the fourth inning, which I hope was a good sign. We'll see. Third inning, you got to stop walking people to lead off an inning, and then the next guy, Rivera, hits a line drive right past the head of Nestor Cortes. So I wrote this down. You think a pitcher in Major League Baseball would ever wear one of those masks? You know, like the women do in softball, college softball, they all wear a mask now.
The pitcher, you said?
The pitchers do. They wear those little masks when they pitch.
Oh, yeah.
Now.
No.
Do you think you'll ever see it in Major League Baseball?
No, we've said this before.
It's just too cool, right? You can't do it even if it's smart.
I bet you it's also, like, uncomfortable.
I would think you can't even design a mask that wouldn't jar just, too much.
Just put like put like a mask like they do in basketball where it's like
I don't know, you look like the Phantom of the Opera out there.
That's what I was looking for.
And the walk, by the way, made it 10 walks to the Orioles in the series, one for the Padres. You know, that's even when you're playing well, you're not going to win games with that disparity. That means you're walking too many, and you're also not drawing walks. That's both ways.
Yep.
And then by the time I wrote, Cowser had hit a three-run homer, Colby Mayo had hit one, and Jackson had hit one, and Mike Schilt was at the mound, and that was it. Pretty much 6-0. I even wrote that maybe Cortes would have to wear one today because they just couldn't afford to go through 9 innings of the bullpen. Fortunately, they just had the added pitcher, so Sean Reynolds was able to pitch. But then he comes in and he walks the first two guys. I'm like, it's just a downer. You give up one run out of it and you say no big deal, but it's a downer as a player, as a fan, as a broadcaster, as anything. You're like, okay, 6-0, we're out of it, but let's just set them down and get up to the plate, walk. And you're like, here we go again. Next inning, walk to lead off the inning. Fifth inning, walk to lead off the inning. You can't, it's just annoying.
Annoying is the right word.
It is. And then, I don't want to pick on Sean Reynolds. Mid-reliever here. But when you walk a guy, you also can't just fall asleep and let him steal second without a throw. These are mistakes that losing teams make, not winning playoff teams
you're right.
make.
You're right.
You know, that bothers me. All right, top of the fifth. At long last, something positive. It took a while. Sean Reynolds, yeah, thank you. Sean Reynolds made a really nice play on that line drive.
Oh,
he got
did,
his
yeah.
glove on it.
Totally.
And then threw the guy out. So I wrote that
Yay!
Down. I go, yeah, exactly. I go, this is the first thumbs up of the day. And then the bottom of the fifth. One out, right? Iglesias gets a double. Diaz gets a single. By the way, Diaz is going
to
start playing more because he's hitting, and Fermin really hasn't
been.
Well,
Fermin had two doubles last night.
He did. But anyway, first and third, one out. Okay, top of the order. We're getting back in the game.
Here we go.
Before you could even sit up in your seat, double play, inning over.
Mm.
That's what happens when you're losing 8 out of 10.
Yes, it is.
Fernando, hard ground ball. Could have gone in the hole and kept the rally going. Instead, double play. Sixth inning, Arise gets his 1,001st hit. It went without notice last night, and I'm done talking about Arise to you fans out there. If you hate him, you're going to keep hating him no matter what I say. But 1,000 hits in, 800 games, which, like, fifth best in the history of the game, it deserves a mention, at least from me. He had another hit here, and then Manny demolish that one.
Yes, he did.
All right. So now 7-2.
And I do understand that some people are saying, like, Manny's just a garbage time hitter.
Oh, come on.
Which is not true. But
no, we've gone through
this. I can see why people feel that way. But you have to start a comeback somehow.
Well, yeah. I mean, if they had won the game right today, then would you have called his home run a garbage
I'm
time home run?
I'm not calling it a garbage time
no,
home
but
run.
No, but I'm pointing
yeah,
that out.
Yeah, probably they would.
You can't choose. Right, they would. But you can't choose what's a garbage time home run, right?
That's true.
It's 7-0.
Still a home run.
You hit a 7-0 and you homer 7-2. You win the game. That was a pretty big home run.
It was.
But if you lose the game 11-2... Then it was a garbage
matter.
Home run, but
yeah.
It's the same home run.
It is.
Yeah, anyway, we've gone through that with Manny, so I'm not going to even get into that. Next up, Ryan O'Hearn, infield single. Another hit against the lefty. Thank you, Ryan O'Hearn.
A lot in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, he just keeps getting hits off lefties. And then, let's see, Laureano. At the walk, you got two on, nobody out. Jackson comes up. 2-2 pitch, strike three. Except they don't call it.
I know.
They call it a ball.
Yeah.
He ends up walking to load the bases. Now you're thinking, maybe it's going to be our day at long last.
I'm almost afraid when the bases are loaded at this point.
Right now, yeah. Well, first, Cronenworth gets an infield single to keep it going.
Yep.
And then the first pitch to Iglesias. I want you to go back, if you have a chance to look at it tonight, you know, if you have it somewhere. You know, they have these websites now, right? You can call up any at-bat, right?
Yeah.
I want you to look at the first pitch to Iglesias with the bases loaded there in the fifth inning.
All right, let me go get it real quick.
You can get it. All right, if you can get it, put
well, I'm
it
not
on
gonna.
The,
it's not gonna be
oh,
a video.
Be
I'm just gonna go
stream?
Look at the. I'm
you
just gonna
look
go
at
look
it?
At the.
All right, well, I'll tell you what it was. It was a fastball center cut, and I mean center cut.
What inning was this again?
This is the bottom of the fifth when the Padres scored, or maybe the sixth.
All right,
yeah,
I'm
sixth.
Looking, okay,
when they made it 7-4, the bases were loaded, nobody was out, and Iglesias was up. It was 7-3. So he was the tying run. The first pitch was a meatball. And I mean meat.
It's top of the zone, but it's there.
It's center cut.
It's there.
And Iglesias takes a hack.
Yeah.
Fouls it straight back. Now, I don't know. I'm not Tony Gwynn Jr. I'm not Rod Carew. I'm not any of these guys. But I've been taught that when you see a ball get fouled straight back, that means the guy was
on it.
Right on
yep.
it. And he just missed it.
Yep.
Of course, the next pitch, he didn't do a double play.
I know.
You know, I mean, to me, he was that close to maybe hitting a grand slam. I mean, he had that swing. The pitch was right there. He just missed it. And by the time that was over, double play, and you end up 7-4.
Chris, this is what really, 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 really bothers me.
Yeah?
When they get guys on base with no outs, it's almost like they have two outs already. Because I know I'm mixing everything together, but it just feels like every time they get guys on base with no outs, it ends up no run scored or one run scored.
Eight out of ten. That's how you lose. 8 out of 10. Top of the seventh, Estrada comes in. Oh, good. We finally got one of our good pitchers in. First guy, walk. I mean, he got out of the inning, but took 22 pitches. To me, that's a big inning. You just scored four to get back in the game. You want your pitcher to go out there, four, five, six pitches, so you can come right back up. Instead of Estrada labored through the inning, he got out of it. But kind of the momentum went away on that walk. I didn't mention Fernando. You know, he was in an 0 for 10, conks the home run. We've seen a little bit, you know, of that from Fernando, and that's a good sign going forward.
It is.
We've talked at length about Miller's incredible, immaculate inning. The other thing about the immaculate inning, when was the last time this guy pitched?
Mason
he hadn't
Miller,
been in a game for a
Saturday,
week.
Maybe?
I mean, yeah. I thought he'd be a little rusty, maybe.
Let me see when he last
Hardly
pitched.
Rusty.
He last pitched on August 31st, so that would have been Saturday or Sunday. Sunday.
Oh, he September. Pitched Sunday? Okay. Well, I thought it'd been longer. But anyway.
But before then, he hadn't pitched since Seattle.
All right. So it was.
So yeah, he's had two outings since August 26th.
Okay. Fair enough. But he didn't look rusty, of course. Liriano led off the eighth with a single. Bottom of the order is coming up. I wrote down Gavin Sheets absolutely has to pinch hit in this inning. You've got him there. There's nothing to hold him for. Can't bring him up in the ninth. You got to bring him up now with a chance to tie the game. And they did.
Yep.
The managing was perfect there, you know. But Jake took strike two, strike three. Sheets took a good hack, foul tipped it. Catcher made a ridiculous play by getting the ball to stick in his glove so that it didn't touch the dirt.
Yep.
And the umpire, same ump, actually looked at the ball. Did you see that?
I did see that.
And he's like, no, there's no dirt on this. I got to call it a strikeout. And Mike Shildt argued, but he didn't really have much of an argument. Ball didn't hit the dirt. There would have been a mark on the ball.
I didn't know that you could go to the ball to
see.
That seems a little weird to me, but.
All right. It finished up with the Laureano incredible catch in the ninth. And then bottom of the ninth, of course. Mudcat went with the old, hey, all we need is a bloop and a blast.
It's true.
It's true, but it never seems to happen.
It never seems to happen.
And I'll tell you, Cano came in there. His pitches were moving all over the place. I don't even know how. Wagner and Tatis didn't hit it. Rise at least hit it, but grounded out. So, there's your notes on the scorecard.
Yes.
For today.
I feel like Luis Arraez has ended the game a lot lately.
Oh, of course he has. Believe me, ever since I stuck up for him, he's a disaster. Everything is a disaster.
We'll be back soon.
Except the bonus hour of Gwynn and Chris. Don't have a lot of good news for you today as we kick off our bonus hour of Gwynn and Chris. Orioles complete their sweep of the Padres. 7-5 the final today. Padres fell behind 7-0. On the strength of four Oriole home runs, three of which came in a row.
Yes.
That was annoying.
The three-run home run is also annoying to me. They give up more three-run home runs, and I don't know that this to
don't
be true.
Don't get me started.
You know what? I was.
We still never hit one.
I was teasing you earlier in the year, but now it's a thing.
Yeah.
They're giving up three-run home runs like crazy
we
now.
We just don't hit three-run homers. We've hit eight of them all season. It's the fewest in baseball.
A three-run homer in the playoffs is likely going to lose you a game.
Or win you one. Yeah, if you hit it. But Padres don't hit a lot of them. They hit eight three-run homers. They've hit three grand slams. The, quote, big fly has not really been much of a part of the Padres' attack. The Dodgers are losing 3-0 in the seventh inning to Pittsburgh. Potentially, the Padres will remain just 2.5 back there. But their lead, you know, is down to, I think, one game now over the Mets for the 5 seed. And the Giants and Reds are only 5.5 back if you want to start thinking the unthinkable, right, that the Padres could actually not even make the playoffs. But I don't think we have to quite get there yet.
Hold on. I have a stat on this, Chris. The Fangraphs playoff projections go all the way back to 2014. In that time, no team that had more than a 94.1% chance of making the postseason with 29 games remaining failed to make the postseason. The Padres are at like 98% right now.
But having said that, there's a first time. I mean, you're not in the playoffs until they put that little check mark.
You're right.
So until I see a check mark, there's plenty to deal with. In this hour, our bonus hour, Scraby is going to do something here called Scraby's Statistic deep dive.
Yep.
I have no idea what he's going to unearth, but stick around for that. In this segment, Scraby wants to play a little Chris versus the fans. Now, we didn't promote it last segment, so nobody's called in yet. So that's a good thing maybe for you out there who has always wanted to play Chris versus the fans, our little trivia game, a chance to win a trip to Las Vegas.
No.
Oh, we got something different.
We have a different prize. It's a new month, so we have a new prize.
All right.
The prize is you will have the chance to win two tickets to the Head and the Heart at Gallagher Square on September 29th. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. I got to tell you, every time I read Gallagher Square, it's so hard for me to say that because my sister's her married name is Gallagher, but it's pronounced Gallagher. Anyway.
This place Gallagher Square.
Yes, and I have to remind myself every time it's Gallagher Square. Anyway,
I gotcha.
Anyway,
if you'd like a chance to beat me at Chris vs. the Fans, it's our little trivia game. We play it at 4 o'clock every day, so a little different for a 6 o'clock game, but you dial in at 833-288-0973. While you're dialing in to play, we can't do this if we don't quite have the open, so let's do that.
If you had one shot, one opportunity to take down the human almanac himself,
howdy do.
Now is your time.
Listen to me, this guy is dangerous.
Now is your opportunity to win a prize.
Well, I hope you know what you're in for.
Chris versus the Fans starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, we already told you what you are playing for. Now I will read the rules. You have to make it through three questions. Each question will get more difficult. If you get the question right, you move on. If you get it wrong and Chris gets it right, you're eliminated. But if Chris gets it wrong, then you move on to the next question or you win. If you're a first-time player, let us know before we get into it, and you'll get that first question for free today. Now, we haven't played in a little bit, so we got some new callers on. This is nice.
Some new contestants. If you're a first-time player, remember.
Tell us.
Let us know.
Please tell us.
You get a freebie.
You get a freebie. Yeah. That is correct. All right, let's go to our first contestant, Tyler. Hello, Tyler.
Hello.
Hey, Tyler.
You ready to play?
How are we doing today?
We're holding together, Tyler.
How are you, Tyler?
Yeah, how about you?
Hopefully better in a few minutes here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yes.
Real quick, Tyler, you didn't play golf yesterday at, where'd I play yesterday?
I don't know.
Mission Trails. Do you play golf, Tyler?
Nope.
Okay, good. Well, no, we had three of us, and we got matched up with a guy named Tyler.
Oh,
so
okay.
Saying, that would be funny if this was him, but.
All right, Tyler, here we go. Question numero uno.
Yes. Number one, right.
Which team is nicknamed the Brew Crew?
Milwaukee Brewers.
Brewers is correct. I do think it's funny that they're named after beer makers. That's my favorite. Question number
two. Was the original name of the Milwaukee Brewers franchise?
Braves.
No. Ooh. Seattle Pilots.
I knew that.
All right. Go ahead.
All right, Tyler. Second question. Which qualifying starting pitcher has the lowest ERA in baseball this season?
Lowest ERA in all of baseball. Qualified pitchers.
That is going to be Trevor Rogers.
Trevor Rogers, he says.
We're talking starting pitchers.
Now he is a starting pitcher, which is for the Orioles. I don't know that he qualifies, though. Scraby says he doesn't qualify, but don't go anywhere because Scraby has a way of being wrong on these things.
I went to MLB.com and I went to the stats section and I filtered by qualified players.
According to ESPN.com statistics, Trevor Rogers is not a qualifier.
Do we want to give him another guess, or is that his guess?
What I want to do, you're gonna kind of let me just. Can I look at Trevor Rogers?
Sure.
Will you give me a second to look
at
him?
Yeah, you can. Stay there, Tyler.
He pitches for the Orioles. All right, and he has an ERA. It's really good. I'm kind of stretching here. He's got a 1.39 ERA.
Okay.
But he's only pitched 90 innings. And you have to pitch one inning for every game your team has played. So they played 130 games. So he's really not even close to qualifying. But the 1.39 ERA, I'm going to give it that Tyler knew that much. Give him another second question.
Oh. Can he guess? Oh, would you rather
him guess
one?
The actual answer? Do you want to guess the actual answer?
Or do
you want
to give me the second? We can do that.
Which one do you want? A new question or guess again?
Let's go with a new question.
All right, so the answer would have been Paul Skeens, right?
Answer would have been Paul Skeens.
Okay, but that's not his question. All right, yeah, but Rodgers is 139, which is quite good, but not enough innings to qualify.
All right, well, here we go. Another
second question. So on a technicality, Tyler stays in the game.
All right, Tyler, name two of the three Major League Baseball players to have hit four home runs in a single game this season.
This year, three people have done it.
We talked about it, I think, yesterday.
We did. Got to just come
this
up with two.
This year it's going to be Kyle Schwarber and Eugenio Suarez.
He's got him.
Nice job. No one's ever going to know Nick Kurtz, but I knew it.
You knew Nick Kurtz because you picked him up for your fantasy team, which didn't matter.
All right, nice job, Tyler. That was pretty good. Well. That was pretty good. Here we go. Question number three. You get this right or Chris gets it wrong, and you are qualified for these tickets. Who is the first Hall of Famer inducted... Wait, let me start that over. Who was the first Hall of Famer for the Mariners? Who was the first Hall of Famer the Mariners ever had?
Ooh. Trick question,
Jack. Pretty tough.
Let's go. Who was first? Let's go with the kid.
Mariners Hall the of kid. Famer. He goes with Griffey.
Ken Griffey.
Not Junior. Bad. He got
you
it.
You are correct. Wow. Yeah, Tyler worked his way through that.
Sometimes it pays to go with the obvious.
Yes. All right, Tyler, you stay right there. I'm going to have to get your information in the break.
I do want to say that, I'd have to see what year he was inducted. I'm giving it to Tyler because we've already gone through 12 technicalities. I believe Gaylord Perry made it into the Hall of Fame before Ken Griffey Jr., and Gaylord Perry did pitch for the Mariners. So I don't, your question could be argued, is all I'm saying.
Mariners Hall of Famers.
Yeah. Well, he's not necessarily a Mariner Hall of Famer, but he played for the Mariners. So that question could be twisted into that. You see where I'm going with this?
I do, but the right answer was Ken Griffey Jr. So.
Okay, as long as you're sure of that.
Yes.
Yes, Gaylord Perry was inducted in 1991.
Oh, well, yeah, that's way different.
I doubt Ken Griffey Jr. was inducted then.
He was inducted in 2016.
Right, but so Tyler's right, in fact, that Griffey is the first acknowledged Mariner.
Okay, thank you.
Into the Hall of Fame.
Thank you.
All right, good job, Tyler. You win the game today. Sorry to everybody else out there. I'm sure there's other people who thought that we should have eliminated Tyler there, but I guess we're in such a bad mood that we tried to do something nice.
Yeah, I'm happy with it because...
You don't have to use any more questions.
Exactly.
You're always happy with that. Pirates, is it over?
It's over. Ohtani just struck
like
out.
Crazy. Yeah, 3-0 final. Pirates do beat the Dodgers.
There's some good news.
The good news is that the Dodgers lost. The bad news is we missed two golden opportunities to pick up ground on them.
I'm not going to worry about that
while they're losing
right
to the
now.
Pirates.
I'm just happy it's still there.
Final score, Pirates 3, Dodgers nothing. We got a pretty good tennis going on at U.S. Open. Osaka and Mukova in the quarterfinals. Second set tiebreak. Osaka won the first set. Earlier today, kind of an upset, Scraby. Anisimova, American, mm-hmm. Amanda Anisimova, defeated the number 2 seed Iga Swiatek. And now here was what I thought was pretty impressive about this. Swiatek had beaten Anisimova in the Wimbledon final a month ago.
Oh.
But she didn't just beat her. She double bageled her.
What does that mean? 6-0, 6-0?
6-0, 6-0.
Oh, so she had revenge
online. In the championship, embarrassed her on the stage at Wimbledon.
That's embarrassing.
Double bagel. And today Anisimova came back and beat her.
So. You just kind of made me hungry a little bit with the double bagel.
Yeah, I know. The double bagel does sound good at this point in time. Later tonight, the number one on the men's side, Sinner, is in action.
Trying to keep it drop out? Didn't he drop out of the last tournament?
The minor tournaments, they can drop out. Okay. Yeah, not the majors. They don't normally drop out. Our guy Taylor Fritz, by the way, last night lost again to Djokovic. 11-0 career for Djokovic against our guy Taylor Fritz. He's got his number, I'd say.
You got to win one of them, I guess.
Not last night.
I mean, Djokovic is like one of the best
tennis players of all time. So.
He'd have to certainly be in the conversation, if not just the winner of the conversation.
There's Federer. And
yeah, there's some guys. Nadal. Yeah, there's guys.
Anyway.
NFL news? Anything I need to add in? Or are we going to talk some NFL? We'll talk some NFL at the bottom.
Because
we're going to do our division previews for the NFC and AFC North. But when we come back, I can't wait for this. Scraby tackled me in the hallway when I got here.
I did.
He said, I got a segment today. It's called Scraby's Statistical Deep Dive.
Yep.
I said, what is that? And then I said, no. Don't tell me what it is. I want to hear for myself. It's coming up next for all of us to hear on 97.3 The Fan. See if Naomi Osaka can wrap up this match point, but it's one of the longest rallies in U.S. Open tennis history. And now it is over. Naomi Osaka.
It's all over.
She's pulling off a heck of a comeback, Scraby. This is a player who was number one in the world maybe, I'm going to say 6 years ago, five, 6 years ago, won a bunch of majors, and then mentally just disappeared. And, you know, very publicly, you know, just had kind of the mental difficulties. I don't ever want to make fun of anybody's mental situation. So I'm not going to say, you know, breakdowns, whatever you want to say, but she just really couldn't get herself to be able to even play tennis, let alone at this kind of a level.
She was definitely struggling with her mental health.
Really struggling and talk open about it, which I think helps a lot of people. And they, you know, they saw her struggle, and then she tried to make a comeback, and she kind of did, but she didn't really get all the way back. And then I think she slipped back again, and just, I think it's probably an ongoing thing for her and always will be.
Yeah.
But now, you know, she's back in the U.S. Open semifinals. This is a kind of story that can impact and be an inspiration for a lot of people. You don't have to be a tennis player to be inspired by somebody else who's going through or has gone through what you may go through. And see them have success gives you the notion that you can do it too.
Yeah, of course.
Everybody's different. Every situation's different. But good on Naomi Osaka for her to get back to the semifinals. All right, Padres. The good for them would be to win a game. Didn't happen today. Orioles 7, Padres 5. Rockies are next Friday night. Rockies are now 39-100.
Whoa.
What a season they're having.
That is a season
there. Yeah, but, you know, right now...
It scares me.
Exactly.
I am so scared about this weekend.
I don't think anybody cares who the Padres are playing right now. They have to just start winning some games and get some starting pitching. And to that end, we don't even know who's going to start Friday night.
It's
TBD at the moment.
It is TBD at the moment.
Anyway, but to enjoy and regale us all, here he is... The kind of, I want to say, rankled Mr. Scraby today's game.
I'm rankled.
And he dug up a bunch of deep dive statistics that he just can't wait to share with us. So
I call it a deep dive. It's a deep dive for me, for sure.
Right. Well, without any further ado, what you got, Mr.
All right. You know what? Do you want to start with my thoughts on... I want to break down a Luis Arraez at bat last night, but okay. I'm going to start with this first. Mm-hmm. And so when I was coming in today, heard the last home run hit in that back-to-back-to-back, and I thought, I'm going to look up and see what the Padres are doing against the rest of the league in the last 2 weeks. In the last 14 games, the Padres have given up the fourth most home runs in baseball with 23, which puts them at the top with teams like the Rockies, the Marlins, the Twins, the Nationals, the Orioles, and the Braves. What do those teams have in common?
They're
all bad.
Yeah.
They've given up 23 home runs in the last 14 games.
The pitching whisperer has gone on leave,
hiatus.
I don't know what's happening. I'm waiting for Niebla to come and ride to the rescue, but you're right. They're pitching, you know.
And let me add this, too, before you get on your pitching.
No,
they've also walked the second most hitters in baseball in the last 2 weeks.
That's a really, you know, intriguing statistic because you can't walk people and be successful.
You can't.
Unless you're Blake Snell. The only guy I know of who can walk people and be successful. But, you know, today the walks were just annoying. How many did they end up having? About eight? About every inning started with a Baltimore guy walked.
Let me see.
Except for three, seven, eight.
Yeah.
Yeah, eight walks today. And, you know, the only inning they didn't lead with a walk was when the guy hit a home run. So,
yep.
Yeah, you got to stop doing that. And that has just not been there. secret sauce. Their secret sauce is throwing strikes, getting ahead of hitters, all that.
This team is built all that Ruben on Niebla pitching. Stuff, so when pitching isn't working, it's going to be tough.
Which is why I think it's funny that people pull their hair out day after day after day with what the lineup is and where everybody bats and who's decisioning making and what's happening. This team wins and loses on pitching. Mm-hmm. Right now they're losing on pitching. None of the other stuff. They're scoring runs. They're getting opportunities. They don't hit enough home runs. I will say that. We already talked about it. You like to get the 2-3-run home run more. But, you know, offensively, you know, they're going through the normal ups and downs of a season. But right now the pitching is just
pitching's
unrecognizable.
I'm about to prove to you that pitching is taking them out of the game before they can actually even start the game. But I want to talk about the Twins series real quick because those are... They should have won 2 of 3 from the Twins. They probably should have swept the Twins. That's what good teams do. They lost 2 of 3 from the Twins. And in the last 2 weeks, the Twins have given up the most earned runs, hits, runs. Teams are hitting 305 against them, giving up the third most home runs. They have the highest ERA, and they have struck out the 8th fewest in baseball.
Do you know why? Because the Twins are minor league team right now.
And that's what I'm saying. You. That's why it's so annoying that the Padres lost 2 of 3 from the Twins. So let me go back to the Sunday at home against the Dodgers. They lose 8-2, the Padres.
That was the first of the 8 out of 10
yes.
that they lost.
First inning, Pivetta gives up 1 run, but could have been a grand slam. Laureano made that catch. They only got a sack fly on that. Diaz hit a 2-run shot to take the lead, but a 5-run 7th from Jeremiah Estrada doomed them. Then they go up to Seattle. Mariners win 9-6. J.P. Sears gives up a run in the first and 2 in the 2nd. Padres score 4 in the 2nd, but David Morgan gives up 5 in the 5th.
Yeah.
So they lose that game. They ended up winning a game, but Padres, again, against the Mariners, they won 7-6. Then, on that Wednesday, Mariners win 4-3. Darvish gives up 4 runs, 3-run homer from Suarez. Padres can't make a comeback happen. Then against the Twins, they're down 5-2 in the 4th, down 7-2 in the 5th. Nestor Cortes gives up 3 runs. Then Peralta, Morgan, and Matsui each give up a run, and they lose that game. Then the Padres win 12-3. They won. They were down 3-1 after 5. Everything, the floodgates opened after that. Then on that Sunday, Twins win 7-2. It was a bullpen day for the Padres. Joe Ryan is a pretty good pitcher, so I'm not going to be too crazy about that. But they were down 6-0 after 5 and down 7-0 after 7. Monday's game, Dylan Cease gave you 4 innings and only gave up 2. They lose 4-3.
He gave up 2, but it took him 91 pitches.
To get through
it was
4.
It was a struggle.
Yes.
And a half.
Lost to the Orioles on Tuesday night, 6-2. They were down 5-2 after the 5th inning.
Yeah.
And then today, Orioles win 7-5, down 7-0 after 3 innings. Nestor Cortes gives up 6, and then he gives up back-to-back-to-back homers in the 3rd. So that is the kind of the theme right now. They're out of the game before the offense can really get into it. But here, I hate picking on Luis Arraez, but I do not think that he should be in the 2 spot. Here's an at-bat from last night. Bottom of the 5th. Orioles are up 5-2. Runners on third with 2 outs. First pitch, called strike. Not a statue take, but a hittable pitch. So it's 0-1. Second pitch, almost in the same spot as the first. Fouled it off 0-2. Third pitch, takes it for a ball, 1-2. Fourth pitch, about a ball from the top right of the strike zone. He swings at it, fouls it off, probably ball 2. Fifth pitch, another foul, but way low and outside. Probably ball 4. And a walk. And Manny's coming up, but it's still 1-2. Sixth pitch, ball in the dirt, 2-2 count. Seventh pitch, high, and ball 5, but hit weakly to center field, and the inning is over with a guy at third. If Luis Arraez is going to bat second, he needs to be walking. That is what Fernando Tatis Jr. has been doing this year. And you probably disagree with me, Chris, but bottom of the 7, bases loaded, 1 out. A guy who doesn't strike out, struck out. So what are we doing with Arraez in the 2-hole right now? He's not hitting well enough to be in those positions, and we've seen him come up a lot at the end of the game as of late, and I have no confidence that he's going to get on base there. I don't see why the team is so resistant to moving him down in the lineup. I don't know who to put there, but right now Luis Arraez cannot be hitting there because he is not the type of guy that they need when he's hitting 285. He doesn't take walks.
What do you want? What do you need?
What do I need? I need a guy who's going to, instead of swinging at ball five, I want a guy who's going to take that walk. Now, I know that this is me hyper-focused on Luis Arizin last night, and he homered, I will say. I should give him that as well. But this stretch has not been good for the Padres, and it seems like a lot of the Luis Arizin at-bats can end up in inning killers.
All right, I'm going to just say a couple things because I've done so much on the Luis Arizin.
I know.
First of all, I'm fine. Move him down. Do whatever you got to do. I don't love Luis Arizin so much that I absolutely have to have him there.
Okay.
All right, personally. Doesn't really mean a hill of beans to me. Secondly, I don't know exactly why they want to keep batting him second, but they do. And so I'm going to just go ahead and root for him and support what they're doing. They must see something they like. And when that changes, it will change and he will move out of the two spot. But for whatever reason, they like him there.
I know.
And I don't know why I keep arguing about this. He bats second, probably, I'm guessing because I don't know, I'm not in the meeting. But he probably bats second because his track record in his career suggests that he's a 330, 340 batting champion hitter who sprays the ball all over the field and keeps the line moving. This year, he has not been that at all.
Ooh, we even got a mouse.
Agreed.
We even got you doing the mouse
okay,
thing.
I'm just saying, 280, he hasn't been good. He swings at way too many pitches out of the strike zone, but when he led the league in hitting and hit 340, he did the same thing. Nobody complained about it.
Because he was getting on base.
I understand.
He was moving the line.
But this is what he does. He swings at everything, and he puts it all, most of them in play, 90% of the time. And he normally gets a lot more hits to fall in. This year, it hasn't happened. They obviously believe it's going to start happening, or they wouldn't keep him there. So I'm tired of defending him because I'm really defending Mike Schilt and the team. And everyone keeps saying that this team can't win with him batting second. And all I'm going to argue and say is, well, they won all year with him batting second. They were in first place 10 days ago with him batting second. So I can't agree that they totally have no chance of being successful with him batting second. Because by and large, until 10 days ago, they've been very successful. And the last thing I'll say is for the people that say, Chris, you don't get it. Luis Arizin is not the worst hitter. He's the worst two-hole hitter in baseball. Just explain to me what analytic is giving you that belief. Or is it just something you're seeing with your eyes? And you've looked at the Royals' number two hitter, and you've looked at the Indians.
I actually did something last week.
I mean, has everybody looked at every two-hitter hole in the hitter in baseball? And what statistic is it about Arizin that makes him the worst? I just want to know, because there are also statistics that say that Jake Cronenworth is the worst defensive second baseman. There are also statistics that say that Luis Arizin is the worst defensive first baseman, which would then give the playoff-bound Padres the worst right side defense almost in the history of baseball. And I just don't agree. I watch all the games. They don't have the worst right side defense in baseball, but analytically they do. So analytically Arizin is the worst, but I want it explained to me what it is that everybody keeps seeing and keeps trying to call to my attention. They say, Chris, he's the worst number two hole hitter. You don't get it. You're stupid, Chris. You're an idiot. He's the worst. Get over it. Stop defending him. Fine. Explain why he's the worst. What is it?
I got one. A guy who's supposed to see a lot of pitches and a guy who's a contact guy, The notion that he has these long, extreme at-bats is false, because if you look at his pitches per plate appearance this year, mm-hmm. the number of pitches he takes per plate appearance, he's 123rd in baseball.
Okay.
3.67 pitches per plate appearance. So a fallacy.
You're pointing out to me that he has 3.67. What does a good number two hitter have? Is that written somewhere? Is it written somewhere that a good number two hitter has to see 5.1?
You're challenging me, and I like this. Last week, these numbers are of last week, because I did this whole Arizin thing. The average two hitter in baseball as of last week, has hit 21 home runs this year. Luis Arraez has hit now 7, but as of last week, 6. He's hitting home runs once every 87 at-bats. An average two-hole hitter in baseball is hitting a home run once every 25 at-bats, according to my numbers from last week. Okay. The average, The average OPS of a two-hitter, 761. As of last week, Arraez's OPS, 706. So those are numbers against the entire league. I took the entire league's two-hitter, and I put him up against Luis Arraez.
So he's below the average.
He's below the average. He has more hits. He has a better batting average. He has more doubles. He has more triples, which is crazy. Not as many walks. He does not strike out as much. But then his OBP and his slugging is down from the average two-hitter.
We don't have to finish with this, but let's just go through the number two-hole hitters. Today's lineups.
Okay.
Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Who's Toronto? One of the best teams in baseball. Addison Barger.
I love him.
Don't even know who he is.
No.
Cincinnati Reds, pretty good team. Noelvi Marte.
All right, yeah.
Guardians, Angel Martinez. No, not the umpire. He's their number two hole hitter. I don't know who he is. Boston Red Sox, Alex Bregman, star. Mariners, Cal Raleigh.
Star.
He's the best, right? Nobody's going to compete with that. Rays, Yandy Diaz, former batting champ. Not three-time batting champ, but one-time batting champ. Angels, Yoan Moncada, once a first overall draft pick, but really terrible player. Bobby Witt, way better, Royals. Matt Olson, Braves, has been, slugger. Michael Bush, Cubs, pretty good. Lennon Sosa, White Sox, well, they're the White Sox. Trevor Larnach, Twins.
They're the Twins.
Don't know much about him. Schwarber, number two. You're not going to compete with him. And if you're going to tell me that Arraez has this many home runs and all the two hitters have that many, part of the reason is because two hitters are Schwarber and Raleigh.
Isn't Schwarber, well, yes, Raleigh does
right?
skew
so they
the
a
numbers.
Lot of, they skew the numbers but, quite a bit.
But isn't Schwarber mainly a leadoff hitter?
No, he's batting two. He's batted second almost the whole last 4 months straight.
Okay.
Trey Turner's batted first. Jackson Churio, one of the great players. Jacob Wilson, good young up and coming. Actually, very similar to Arraez. Doesn't walk much. Good batting average. Cardinals, Ivan Herrera. And Yankees, Aaron Judge. Again.
Excuse
so
that.
So we should put, you know, I guess we should just put our best guy second because that's what they're all doing. Yordan Alvarez, another great guy. Rafael Devers, another slugger. Ezekiel Tovar. So I get it. There's a Juan Soto bat second. There's a lot of great number two hitters out there. So maybe the Padres need to change it and put, I guess, Manny's their best hitter, so he should bat second.
Or O'Hearn if they want to do the left thing, you know, they can do that.
And then you got to figure out the rest of the lineup. The argument that if you want to tell me he's the worst, fine. Explain to me why you say that. And I can't argue that he's not as good as Soto and Devers and Judge and Schwarber and Raleigh. There's some major players there. Okay. But if you tell me that this team can't be successful with him in the second hole, I can't agree. I'm not trying to even argue with you. I just can't agree. They were in first place 10 games ago with him batting second.
And I said this before I presented this last week. I said teams can have different strategies. I have no issues with teams, with the Padres doing something that's outside the norm, as long as it works. And I think people are getting things confused because on the chat it's like, hey, let's DFA Arraez, and they're making fun of the people that are hating on him. But all I'm asking is for Arraez to move down in the lineup. I'm not saying anything about getting him off the team or putting him on the bench. I'm just saying move him down in the lineup.
But I'm asking you and everybody.
I just gave you numbers.
I know you did. I'm asking you and everybody else. Is that going to help them get some people out in the top of the first inning? They've been down 7-0. They're losing 7-0 in every game.
Totally fair. Because that's not on Luis Arraez.
They've lost 8 out of 10 games. And if you want to put it all on him batting second,
I
would say that's pretty misguided.
No, this little stretch right now is all pitching. But when your pitching isn't good, you have to maximize your lineup. I'm not looking to change the entire thing.
I just think
at-bats in the two spot right now are not the right at-bats, in
my opinion. I just think it's rich that somebody, there are people out there that are listening to this that are diehard analytic baseball, really savant people.
Yeah.
And then there's you. You are a pretty decent little fan of baseball, but I find it kind of rich that you're sitting here telling me that you know what a number two hitter needs to be, yet a guy who's won the Manager of the Year award on a team that's been in first place all year apparently is stupid because he doesn't agree with you.
No, this is just my opinion. Okay. I'm not calling Mike Schilt stupid.
Well, then say it's your opinion because
I did. I said in my opinion. I'm not saying that Mike Schilt's doing anything wrong. And by the way, I am not on board with firing Mike Schilt and Ruben Nebel and Victor Rodriguez. That would be crazy to do that. I don't think that Mike Schilt's a bad manager. I think that he may be a little stubborn sometimes in the way that he puts together his lineup. But I know that they have more numbers than me, and I say that all the time. So just from my view in my seat, if I can see that the two holes are kind of an issue, then I think the team can see that as well. And I don't think you're saying anything wrong either, Chris.
Well, I just think if they felt it was an issue, they would do something. The same way, and I keep saying this one, the same way they would have made a change at shortstop a long time ago if they felt one was warranted when everyone wanted Xander Bogaerts DFA'd from this team. They would have made a change. But they didn't feel one was warranted because they looked at Xander Bogaerts' track record and they knew he could be doing better. And guess what? He did.
He did. And you know what? If Luis Arraez starts hitting on Friday and he puts together a bunch of great games, keep him in the two hole. I just want the guy to hit. I just want the team to win and the guy to hit, and Luis Arraez to hit. That's what I want.
Last thing. You can save all your tweets because I'm not going anywhere near Twitter for the next like month because I already know what you're all going to tell me. We wrap up with a final segment looking at some NFL picks, which will be a little more relaxing
when Chris returns.
Along with Scraby representing all of you and me representing me.
No, you got a lot of fans on the chat.
Anyway, enough on him. Honestly, it's not going to matter what he does if they don't start getting some people out. And that's what it's going to come down to here, the final 20-some-odd games. So start Friday in Colorado. We will talk more baseball tomorrow. Roundtable, 10 o'clock in the morning. An hour of commercial-free Padre talk tomorrow night after our show. The first game of the season in the National Football League. Cowboys, Eagles. Time for Scraby and I to preview the AFC North. And the NFC North. We did the Eastern divisions yesterday. If you want to go back in the show, you can find it.
Do we want to do the West or the South tomorrow?
We'll see. Whatever you're in the mood.
All right.
But yesterday, I think if you go back, you'll realize that did we have a clean sweep on the Dolphins last? Or no, you picked the Patriots, I think.
Yes.
I
can go back and look, actually. Let me go look real quick.
I know we had a clean sweep on the NFC East. We had the Cowboys last. That's where we had the sweep.
Yes, we did have a
Cowboys
sweep there.
Cowboys were last in all three picks yesterday.
East. Tony and I both said the Patriots.
Oh, I stuck with my Dolphins.
For the last place.
They won't let me down. All right, let's go to the NFC and AFC North. First up, the winner of the division.
For NFC North.
NFC North, yeah. Who's going to win it?
It's
a great division.
It's going to be between the Lions and the Packers, in my opinion. But I think the Lions have a little bit more experience with the big games, and so I'm going to say the Lions win the division.
Yeah. Don't look now. I mean, first game this Sunday, Detroit at Green Bay. So right away.
Right away.
Get it straight up. I think too many people are leaning to the Packers just because they got Micah Parsons.
I agree.
Won absolutely nothing in his life. The Lions have got to be motivated by that terrible playoff performance.
Yes.
So
yes.
I just think that's going to give them the edge. I will take the Lions.
All right. Who's your last place?
Blindly, a lot of people are telling me that Ben Johnson is just all that and that the Bears are automatically, going to be incredible. I will say this. I'd be an improvement over Matt Eberflus, so I'm sure they are going to be better. But it's a good division. I can't tell. I hate to pick against Kevin O'Connell because I really like him. But I do think J.J. McCarthy may be a little in over his head. A year to study was helpful.
But he didn't play.
I was never that enthralled with him at Michigan enough to think he can really carve up the NFL. I'll probably be wrong. I'll say the Vikings last.
You know, this is his rookie year on the
field. I know.
So
yeah, after a year.
And
they don't
best
really have
friend,
anybody else to go to, do they? I mean, like, if
couldn't
he
even
struggles,
tell you their backup.
Yeah, I don't know.
I hate to do this to my best friend and former teammate, Kevin O'Connell, but I'm going to choose the Vikings.
Vikings as well. All right.
My breakout for, or no, the
MVP.
MVP. Jeez, I always get these things wrong. Jahmyr Gibbs. I'm just doing this out of the fact that he is my fantasy football running back, but he is a good player, so Jahmyr Gibbs, MVP. Who's yours, Chris?
I think he, you know, Goff is right there. It's going to be a Lion. I think they're going to win it. I love Amon-Ra St. Brown. I do, but I think Gibbs is more the focal point team.
All right.
The only thing I will caution you and every other Jahmyr Gibbs owner, they still bring old Montgomery in for a lot of those touchdowns, and that really is annoying.
They do.
it's annoying if you have Jahmyr Gibbs.
I agree with you.
But I'll take Gibbs. He's that good.
All right, the breakout star of the NFC North, mine will be Matthew Golden, Packers wide receiver. Don't know why I picked Matthew Golden.
First-round draft choice the Packers have made at wide receiver in a million years.
A long time. They never did it with Aaron Rodgers, but they did it for Jordan Love. So Matthew Golden, I don't know why I'm buying the hype, but I am, so I'm going to say him. What about
He's a breakout. I'm also going to go for a Packer. I'm down to two guys. I'm either down to Jameson Williams of the Lions, who is like a 60-yard reception waiting to happen every time he lines up.
But that's about it. If he doesn't get anything, it's like 3 for 20.
I know, but 3 for 120 is really good.
And a touchdown is good.
Yeah. People are telling me Tucker Kraft of the Packers is going to break loose. I have him in fantasy, so I probably wrecked it for him by doing that. Here's my breakout. Packers defense.
Oh.
Because they picked up Micah Parsons, and they're always opportunistic already.
All right.
Watch out for the Packers defense.
Wow.
That's my breakout.
What's your bold prediction for the NFC North?
Well, I'm looking forward to this one. Now that Matt Eberflus can no longer be blamed, I'm looking forward to see who Caleb Williams blames at the end of this season if he gets sacked 68 more times. And he continues to struggle to show the promise and the greatness and the athleticism that was guaranteed him out of USC. I watched Bears Hard Knocks last year, and I don't think this guy has the same maniacal desire to study football and learn the game the way tip-top quarterbacks have to. I think he relies on just his athleticism. I don't think he's as well prepared as other quarterbacks. I'm calling Caleb Williams stays mediocre. That's my pick.
Oh, okay. I said, who does Caleb Williams blame? Caleb Williams, mediocre.
Stays mediocre.
My bold prediction is Micah Parsons has a terrible season after all the attention of the offseason.
Yeah.
All right.
Good. We got 2 minutes, so
let's
go
to AFC North. Let's go to the first place team, Chris.
I the Ravens. I'd like to see the Bengals could unseat them, but I don't think
I agree. Ravens are the winner. Last place, I say the Browns.
I want to pick the Steelers just to root against Aaron Rodgers, so I'll pick the Steelers.
All right. The MVP, I'm going to go with Lamar Jackson.
Who?
Yeah, right.
I'll take Jamar Chase just to give him a run for the money. Chase is about the best receiver we've seen in a long time.
Who's your breakout?
Fantasy breakout in the AFC North. I don't know. Does Zay Flowers qualify?
I don't know.
Or did he already break out?
I think he already broke out.
You think he already broke out? How about Chad Brown? Does he get it? Or broke out too?
That's all good.
All right, Chad Brown of the Bengals. He's one of the best running backs in the league.
Chase Brown,
yeah.
He's one of the best running backs in the league,
but I don't know his
Brown.
Name. Yeah, I don't happen to know his name.
All right, my breakout is Keaton Mitchell, running back for the Ravens. Love this guy. I've been
watching him for three years, but Henry never gives up this position.
Very true. All right, my bold prediction for the AFC North, the Bengals are going to start 4-0 after slow starts the last few years.
Wow, out of the gate.
They open up with the Browns and then the Jags. I know they play the Broncos in their fourth game.
So you're taking advantage of a weak schedule.
Yes.
I need music for this one. This is such a great bold prediction. At the end of the season, none other than Shedeur Sanders has more passing yardage than Aaron Rodgers.
What?
There you go, Scraby. There's a bold prediction
for
you.
That is bold. Shedeur Sanders more passing yards than Aaron Rodgers.
Now, at midseason, Aaron Rodgers may have a big lead here, but Aaron Rodgers gets hurt. Something happens. Shedeur Sanders gets a lot of mop-up time.
Could happen.
It would be unbelievable if I get that one right. I'm going for it.
That's a good one. I mean, I appreciate you actually stepping out there and giving a real bold prediction.
Shedeur Sanders, we've made fun of this guy to no fault, I don't think, of his own. The NFL colluded not to pick him. And I don't know that it was on Dion or what, but for some reason, they didn't want to choose this guy. And I've even heard that Cleveland went against the wishes of people to pick him at all.
That's what Eric Dickerson said.
Right. So I kind of am rooting for him now at this point.
Me too.
Stick it to all these people. We got time for one more thing. Framber Valdez last night threw a pitch that his catcher did not call for. And it hit the catcher right in the stomach at 98 miles an hour. And if you watch the replay, Framber Valdez did that on purpose.
What?
There is no question in mine or anyone else's mind, even though Framber Valdez has denied it vehemently for the last 24 hours.
His agent is saying that too.
Yeah. Watch it, and you tell me. If he didn't do it on purpose, there would have been an immediate reaction. But he doesn't react at all. He wanted to hit his catcher. They were mad because the previous hitter had given up a grand slam.
I'll watch Valdez blame
the catcher for the mishap. Watch it. You'll see what I'm talking about.
That's kind of crazy.
We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 a.m. for the roundtable. Gwen and Chris tomorrow at 2. Adios.